This is a production of Cornell University.
Thank you again for all of you that were able to be at the retreat last week. I think the biggest takeaway was that it was really nice just to be together and have the opportunity to communicate without the pressures of the time of the weekly meetings. But thank you again. Just to give you a quick update, Hey and I are about, I'd say, 90% complete of the summary report. And we intend to get that report to the Welfare Committee tomorrow, as well as the Office of Assemblies. And then once the Welfare Committee has had an opportunity to provide some feedback on the report, we will then be sending a full copy with appendixes to the full assembly when we submit it to Mary Opperman on the 25th. The intention is that, or the expectation rather, is that it's probably going to take a couple weeks for Mary to provide feedback on it based on, I don't know what, I'm sure she's very busy, so this will just be another thing on her plate. But my goal is that we're able to publicly communicate the summary back to the entire staff community by the end of February, early March, so that they see what was heard and what steps and actions are going forward. But feel very good about the efforts of everybody participating in that, so thank you. With regard to the approval of the minutes were not uploaded, so I would like to see if we have a motion to push that till the next meeting for the approval of minutes from past meeting and this meeting. Is there a motion? Is there a second?
Second.
Great, thank you. All right, so today I'm very pleased to introduce Diane Braddock, who is from Cornell Wellness and Work-Life Balance, and works with Michelle Arteby, who many of you have probably met or come across in the past. I'm sure Diane, you may have seen as well, but Diane is here to talk to us about some new initiatives. So Diane, the floor is yours.
All right. Thank you so much. Thanks for the invitation. I don't mind being right here if all of you can see, if that's okay. I sent ahead and also have available for you four handouts for today. This is just a guide of the discussion. One is the Employee Assembly presentation highlights. So that's just what I'd like you to take away today. Another one is a new seven-dimension well-being model, and we'll be talking about that. There is a link on the bottom of the page, and I encourage you to look that up on your phone or on a laptop if you'd like. I know there's a little chance that people will get lost in there, but I would like to let you know that this is now live and interactive. Another one is the Family Life Resources for Staff. This has been updated with some new programs, some initiatives, and also some web links and so on. And then another handout on care.com that Michelle asked me to hand out. This is something that I guess she has talked about extensively at various meetings and so on, but people still need to know the nuts and bolts of getting an account and how to move that forward. So those are just there for you to peruse. I decided to go low tech today because I really just want to have a conversation. There are some new initiatives that I'd like you to be aware of. And again, I really appreciate the opportunity that I have at Cornell, because my role is very unique and different compared to a lot of people's. What I do is care about employees, and a lot of the programs and initiatives that we take on are strategic to our mission, strategic to the HR function, and so on. But I really get that chance to be a counselor, be an advocate, be a coach, oftentimes be a navigator to resources and so on. So it's an amazing role, and I really enjoyed an opportunity to be here to share that with you. So with that, well-being is a term that means a lot of different things to different people. And for us, it means that it has a lot of different dimensions. It's not unicorns and candy. It really is not fluff. It's really the heart and core of what it takes for us as human beings to be able to balance both work and life. And so a lot of what we do is analyze, look at current practices, do a lot of the research and so on, and make sure that some of those policies and procedures, some of the resources and services are out there and available to Cornell when and if you need them. Hopefully you'll never need them, but if you do, we're here for you. So the well-being model was developed over as a project team from Mary Opperman's crew, and it's a strategic plan, part of her strategic overall plan for people to feel engaged and connected. And so what we do is we want to make sure that that information is out there. And over the course of the last several months, Ashley Fazio, Sue Brightly, and Michelle Arterby really that concept a reality by developing this wheel. And this wheel is interactive. So if you go to this web link, you can go and you can click on each of these round circles, and it will take you to a web spot that has a variety of different links. We're starting to roll this out. It's been a really soft launch at this point, but pretty soon you'll be seeing this lots of different places around campus. And I hope our goal is to engage more employees with it and to make sure that people understand all the different services and resources that are out there and available for people. So if you look at well-being and there's two or three of these circles that are lopsided or partly not there, you can see that it's not around and not rolling really well. And that's what happens. And those are the people who come to our office and are struggling with certain portions of these dimensions. And that's a lot of what our services are, is to really respond and make sure that people do have a better understanding of the resources or get the help that they need. So with that, there's a description of each of the dimensions and also then different services that are underneath each of those dimensions online. So I encourage you to go to that. Let us know if you have any questions on that. The one that particularly is of interest right now is the physical or the well-being. And I know that wellness has been here a couple times and also has a very big presence on campus. We are definitely a partner with the wellness crew. We work hand in hand together. We share office space. We go back and forth with a lot of self-care initiatives. And so, and particularly in the month of January, people think about that with resolutions and eating better and healthy and staying fit and exercising and all the K runs that are out there and so on. But we really want to make sure that people have not only an understanding of physical well-being, but also all the other dimensions. And I think that one becomes the most prevalent and easy to understand. And you'll hear a lot more from us on all the rest of the dimensions as well. So help is available. So how is that help available? There's seven of us over in the EHOB building, the ESTA office building, but we're also on campus a lot. We get out there to do presentations, we do trainings, we do workshops, we do series of things. We work with various university committees to make sure that when there are gaps in services that we're working behind the scenes and getting those done. A lot of what you hear from our office is work-life fit. For people who are pregnant and parenting, a lot of resources there. Seeking of child care or elder care. Breastfeeding accommodations, our office coordinates all of the lactation and servicing mom's rooms. We do a lot with flexible work arrangements. That's one that has been somewhat controversial, but really a focus for us this year, is how do we get information out there about working remotely, working sustainably, changing up the environment and changing up the process if people want to ask for remote work. Transitioning to retirement is a huge one. We're working very specifically with a benefits office and helping people normalize retirement conversations. Retirement often has been seen as, oh, you don't talk about that or you don't deal with that until the end. And when you're really close, then it becomes really uncomfortable because it often is associated with ageism. And so we don't want that anymore. We want people to really see retirement as a portion of the work experience. And we want to have active and respectful conversations about that. And then the last one is financial stress. Also, January is a month where people realize a lot with taxes coming up and also maybe overspending. In December, there's a lot of things that happen in the month of this time of year for financial help. So we do have a lot of services that are out there and available for that. So just real briefly, the work-life team is part of Human Resources. We're at the East Hill office building, but again, we come to you. If you have meetings or services or departments or events that are coming up, we love to be a part of that. We help by phone, email, person, whatever works. We have a lot online. We do a lot of our workshops now remotely. Our goal this year was 60% of our workshops being available remotely. We've surpassed that, 80% of them are now. And so people can view those or see those in different ways. And hopefully that will work a little bit better. My specific role at the university is as a consultant. And often what I do is I become the first step into the human resource world. And my goal is to help assess what a person is needing. analyze a little bit more about their background, what their strengths are, what are the gaps, where are there some ways that we could help navigate them towards those resources, coach them along the way if they need that. So sometimes people come to see me and it's a one-time deal. Sometimes it's monthly, sometimes it's weekly, whatever is their time frame. Some people come when it's not a crisis, and a lot of people come when it is a crisis. So we do a lot of work with our human resource reps that are out there in the various departments and buildings and a lot of the supervisors to make those situations work better. We work really closely with faculty and staff assistance program. So I am a counselor by trade, but if there's a higher need from counseling and it needs to go into therapy and or psychotherapy or whatever level of additional assistance that our office can't provide, we do direct and respectful referrals. We work with Cornell Wellness, as I mentioned, the services and transition team for a lot of new employees that are coming in. They do walk by our office, they get introduced to us now, so they are beginning to see our office as an integral part of the Cornell experience as an employee. We're also working very closely with medical leaves right now. When people are in transition, oftentimes it's about medical situations, and they need to better understand when they can leave, how they can leave, when they can come back, how to get work done during the time that they're out, and so on. And sometimes those are emergencies, sometimes they're planned. So it depends on what the situation is. Okay, financial support, we're there to help. I wanted to make sure everybody was aware of, again, the Emergency Care Fund. People familiar with that? A care fund is really there for up to $1,500 for sudden or unforeseen or unavoidable situations. Our office does process those applications. We also have bus tickets to New York City for emergency for medical scenarios. So if somebody has to go to Weill Medical Center, we do offer the campus to campus bus vouchers to be able to do that. I also work with the credit counseling. It's called ClearPoint Counseling. They come to campus several times. So if you know somebody who's really struggling with over expenses and or debt, we're happy to talk with them about that. And then with retirement planning, we're working closely with the benefits office, but most of the retirement planning that we do is encouraging people to seriously look at where they're at right now, where they want to be in 10 years, and then seeing what we can do to make that happen within the vendors that we have on campus. So both with Fidelity and TAA and all the rest of the vendors that we have. And then one of the last ones I want to highlight is just our parenting resources. 37% of the Cornell employees have children under the age of 5. That's a lot. But then there's also a significant number that have teenagers, and God bless them. I went through those years, never want to go through those years again. So we do have a lot of services that are available, workshops, support groups, community resources that help with a lot of the what you can consider those struggles. Elder care and adult care, we do workshops. We have a support group that meets on a monthly basis in Weill Hall. And we do a lot of educational programs like end of life planning, what legal documents do you need in your life, grief and loss, housing transitions, dementia, and medical concerns. And right now we've made a commitment, but over the course of the next year, we have several things in motion with Cornell professors and people who are doing research right here at Cornell to give them floor time to be able to share what they're doing and how it impacts, and so on right here. And then lastly, the care.com membership. I want to make sure that people just are aware of that, both for child care, elder care, house care, housekeeping, vacation stays, and so on. It's a network platform that is now global. We found that a lot of our services were really focused on Tompkins County, and we have employees that live way beyond Tompkins County and globally. Care.com seemed to be the right platform after a lot of investigation and be able to do that. So it's a touch and personal. We get that. We understand that. But it is the way that services are provided right now. And we encourage, if people need help figuring that system out, to come to our office and we walk you through it. And then lastly, retiree engagement. One of the things that we want to make sure that people understand is that as an employee, you're going to always be associated with Cornell, and we want you to keep engaged and connected with Cornell when you leave. A lot of people leave and feel either isolated or their role is completely changed and retirement isn't quite what they wanted. So we're working closely with recruitment and the office to make sure that there are part-time opportunities as well as part-year opportunities and ways that you can give back if you so choose after retirement. We're doing that through workshops, through events, and working with a number of different committees to plan some really strong programs for people to come back and have a good time after they leave. So I wanted to leave a little bit of time for questions. If people had questions, I know it's a lot of information. You're going to continue to see our faces in a lot of the subcommittees and committee work that's on campus. And again, we really appreciate the opportunity just to share what we do on a regular basis with you today. Any questions?
Yes.
Yeah. Sure. I have just a question. In looking through this, it doesn't seem to really highlight the New York Paid Family League, which, you know, is I think is a really important resource. And I think many people are still completely unaware that it exists. So
they are. They're actually working on a brochure for that. It is on the web. It is the forms, and the most relevant use of the forms is there. They're still working out the kinks. It really came into full force in January, and we have over 500 employees that are using that benefit, but we certainly need to get the word out for certain. And it will definitely be a standalone brochure and talked about at onboarding all the way up through.
Okay.
Agree.
Herb?
Hi.
I had two things. One is, since you mentioned free bus tickets, like to put in a pitch for Cancer Resource Center, which also has free bus tickets for family members and stuff like that if you need to go to Rochester, New York City.
And that's a good point, too, is that not only the person who needs the medical treatment, but they can take a companion along. And if it's a child under five and they can sit on the lap and so on, it can be a full family be supported by the vouchers. But the Cancer Resource Center has been doing it longer than what Cornell has, and they're an amazing resource in the community.
So, and the second question I had, we had a retreat last week, and one of the things that came up was the disconnect between Cornell HR and departmental HR. And are you having any problem with getting buy-in with this, with the departmental HR?
We don't particularly. I think we end up being viewed as kind of the good guys, the helpers, the counselors, the people out there with a lot of resources. Some of the other departments that have tougher policies or things that people don't like to deal with, I think we're having a little bit harder time. But I think it's a large number of people, 130 just in under Mary's umbrella, Mary Opperman's umbrella, and I think there's always that goal to make sure everybody is saying the same language and having the same messages and so on, but it's very much a large organization that needs to continue to foster networking, for sure.
Chris.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah.
You guys cover a lot of areas that could help a lot of people, so the sort of the tough question is, how do you measure success in your department?
Well, we have two people that are really focusing only on data and analytics. That's Linda Kroll-Hall and Veronica Banks. And they, each of our programs, each of our workshops, each of the initiatives, they track all that information. They work specifically with all of the HR representatives to make sure that if that information is out there, how is it being accessed? So we have usage information, but also effectiveness. And we work really closely with the employee surveys to make sure that we're responding not only to the trends that we see in our office and so on, but also, you know, what's out there on a regular basis. Still lots of work to do. You could multiply me by 20 and still not for me to go.
We need one of you for each employee.
Clone me. And definitely, I don't do this alone by any means. There's such strong support from Mary and the administration, and you know, being able to do this kind of work is both a blessing and a curse, because it's not fluffy, it's not easy work, it's really hard work, but particularly when employees come forward with a lot of the challenges that they have. It's a large organization to make a dent in, so we do really appreciate both the employee assembly and the work that you do to really fight for the employees' rights and responsibilities with that, but also it's just there's a lot of work to be done.
Any other questions? Well, Diane, thank you very much for being here.
Yeah.
And please, if the employee assembly can ever be more of a source of support, whether it's getting word out, whether it's participating in events that you all are hosting, please feel free to ask, and we will I'm sure we have a lot of folks in here that would be willing to participate in that. So, yeah. Thank
Feel
you.
Feel free to share all of this information and also go to the website, explore that little model a little bit. Let us know what's confusing, what's not working, what's needs a little bit more push or a little bit more emphasis. We appreciate the feedback.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
And please, if you'd like to stay and have Dave. Lunch, please.
Lunch is waiting at home.
Okay.
Okay, but thank you.
So Tarek is next, and he's going to present us some information from his research that he's been working on over the last, I guess, several months, right? Or a year?
Almost a year.
A year.
I mean, yeah. It has been growing.
Work so in progress.
Content. Okay, so.
Floor is yours.
Thank you. I guess I'll stand in front. So. So I'll start off with an explanation and to figure, you know, kind of loop you in on this work in progress. So to start off, this is a personal time off study. So I looked at the Cornell policy 6.9 that relates to the time off. And I started having some questions about it. My initial kind of purpose was to figure out how much are we on par with other institutions, other peer academic institutions, you know. So that's where, sorry. So that was my initial kind of big picture. Let me dig in and find some information and grab that, because, you know, when I became interested in employee assembly, you know, I was talking with Laura, like everybody's take, what, like how much time off do we have? So to clarify this, this is about time off, you know, for exempt and non-exempt employees. Although I looked at my constituents, the exempt ones, and because they kind of compare. So that's kind of a general outline. So that's number one. Number two, how did I do this? So as you can see here, this is Cornell University. I've accessed the vacation for the exempt staff, you know, like this is our breakdown, that's our accrual rates. I looked at personal and health leave, I put it there, and I looked at our holidays. So I'm kind of, I was interested in looking at time off we use for recreational purposes, not necessarily for being sick, because across the board, most universities provide the same package for being sick, like around 12 days, one day a month. So that's the methodology. So I've done this for all Ivy League schools, you know, all peers, you know, and I checked with the HR if they wanted to add more academic institutions on this. So we're looking at Brown, Columbia, Cornell, Dartmouth, Harvard, University of Pennsylvania, Princeton, and Yale. And also I've added some regional academic institutions, which are Binghamton, Rochester, Syracuse. So far so good. Any questions about like what's the goal or what methodology I used? Yes, Anne, yeah.
I just want some clarification on how you extrapolated from exempt to non-exempt, just the comparison and how you figured that out.
Well, I did not look at non-exempt because when I was looking through policies from different academic institutions, I could not decide exactly like if they're comparable in a sense, because they work different hours. So in our case, our non-exempt, our non-exempt employee, yes, because this is exempt, our non-exempt employees work 40 hours. Other places they work 35. But the accrual rates, they kind of are similar to their exempt staff. So
we
and
were
then,
39, just
yeah,
to
we're
clarify.
39.
Non-exempt
yeah, I mean,
is 39.
Yeah, I mean, around that. So I did not want to like go down deeper to an hour level to figure out accrual based on your hourly work. So that was like really complicated. So I was trying to make it as simple as possible. And although at the end of the day, actually our exempt compares to non-exempt, their accrual rates are the same. So I just want to make the distinction because I did not look in depth for non-exempt. You know, and I'm not trying to undermine the non-exempt. I'm just trying to make the study makes sense much, but otherwise it's really a pain in the nightmare. So.
I had the same question.
Yeah, okay. So any other questions at this point? So what I've done, I looked at the policy. So the link I shared with you was basically this compilation of all the policies I looked at, and I just put it in one location. And then after I've done that, I've converted it into basically an array that has the information. So another piece of information here, I looked at employee kind of years of service from 0 through 25. So Tariq, at year of service number one, how many days of accrual and holidays do I get? I get this much, all the way to year 24. So I'm graphing my accrual rates over 24 or 25 years. Make sense? So that's where the graph is gonna, be more. So after I'm doing this, I just decided to graph the data. So initially, so I'll just jump into some results here. So this is the study. Feel free to look at it. It's just basically a bunch of numbers, and there's a lot of numbers there. And I tried, I copied the same verbiage from their website, and I provided
it's the linked to the agenda.
All right, so this is our first graph here. Let's make this. All right, this is my first graph. All right, so I started with looking at vacations only, because you get vacations, we get holidays, and in our case, we get health and personal leave on top of it. So the initial result was, let's clarify what's what. So at the bottom, I have the years, service years in years, And on the top, how many days we get per year in that case. So at year zero or year one, Cornell employees get 15 days. And then at year 10, we have an extra day every year till year 15, we reach 20. Make sense? So far, so good. So some people started arguing, well, Cornell gets Christmas off. Other universities don't get Christmas off. So we have this added advantage. So I thought, well, let me compare this by adding the holidays. So same thing now, after adding the holidays, I guess you can't see a lot in the graph because it's kind of, do you see these lines here?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it looks better on the screen. So we're kind of still at the bottom. We start kind of, in this case, 27 days. Some people start inching up here, like they start gaining more days. Look at the solid graphs, not the dotted lines. The dotted lines are like standard deviations. They start going up here, but we really, most of everybody is moving up at year five, say, this axis. So yeah, by year five, actually everybody got their initial increase. So I looked at two trends. There is a trend, like the ones who increase their holidays, at year five, they reach kind of standard, okay? But then the other trend is that year 20, they would get another bump, basically another 5 years. So I've seen this throughout. And comparing this to, let's look at, regionals, this is some regional data. So regional data, it kind of looks similar. It looks like they do more increments. They don't give things up front. They do increments along the way, but there's Binghamton, Syracuse, and Rochester. And I'm just trying to look at big picture. I'm not trying to pick on each like university, just like where we lie on the graph. And then when we add the holidays to them, we get this picture. So I don't know, I mean, as you can see, we're kind of in both scenarios, being in comparison to our peer institutions, Ivy League or regional, we kind of are still falling at the bottom in both cases. Okay, so that was my initial kind of conclusion about it. So that's where I went to HR and said, let's start talking about this. So I wanted to share this with the EA because at this point, HR is open for the idea of maybe changing the accrual rates for people who have less than 10 years of service. Because, I mean, it's obvious that, so like going back to this one, I guess that's the major graph that I wanna stay on. Like, it's obvious everybody's reaching some level at year five, and then they continue, and if they are really, if the university wanna award their performance at year 20, they get another bump. But we're not, I just want us to be like on par with other institutions. So so these are my findings. So as I said, HR would like us to explore this area. Maybe we can move this ladder here or remove this ladder, you know. That's why I'm here. I would like thoughts, concerns from employee assembly so we can move forward. So if you have any questions, go ahead.
So my question is where does Cornell justify this rapid succession of steps up between year 10 and 15?
Good question. I don't know. I mean, yeah.
Like I said, is it cost savings? Do you bunch it all between year and 10 and 15? Like what's the
great question.
Advantage
I need to
of
ask
it.
Them. So why between 10 and 15? Like why wait till then? It looks like they would like to kind of make this sooner. So that's good. So that's thinking in the right direction, but I have no idea. I'm going to ask them. So good question. Any other questions, thoughts, concerns? I mean, at this point, what I got from Mary's team, they said with this graph, still Cornell is generous with its offering because we have health and personal leave, and health and personal leave allow you to take time off, not just for being sick. But that was kind of a hard thing to argue with because most academic institutions give you sick leave, they don't give you personal leave. Actually, they might give you some personal leave, like 3 days a year, 2 days a year. In that sense, when that happens, you have to use them within the year. So that was kind of hard to, it's kind of such a gray area and Cornell is so unique. But really looking at my graph, I'm not even comfortable, you know, so how can I be generous? You know, go ahead.
May I ask a question?
Yeah, please.
And it's a little bit of devil's advocate, but playing to your comment about Cornell is unique. I spent a great deal of time qualifying our uniqueness. So comparing to Ivy's in different market areas with different hiring policies and pools from which to draw seems apples to oranges to me. And I wonder if you could just explain your impetus. Do you feel like that Cornell's policies are not enough for what you would like, or is it just more people, other people are getting more, so we should get more? If you could just explain that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I had some discussions with other members and they mentioned, like Laura, I think you mentioned before, that it's hard to recruit and retain people giving our like geographical location. Mm-hmm. If you look at Ivy's, most of them are located in metropolitan areas.
Right.
Although Cornell has a presence at New York City, and when I look at Columbia, which is on top, and Cornell is at the bottom, and we're trying to recruit the same pool of people, at the end of the day, I think they're going to look at that benefit and say, well, why not work for Columbia? They give me almost, in this case, between, let's say, 40 to 27. That's more than 2 weeks extra vacation, especially when you're starting. So that's one thought. You can look at it from another perspective, basically regional, like who are we competing regionally? So yeah, I mean, HR had that thought. Well, we compete with Ithaca College, Binghamton, you know, Syracuse and Rochester. Still over the long run, they are getting more days of vacation. So in I had that kind of, evaluation, but why, so why are we coming out at the bottom? We're not becoming like, I would like us to be more in the middle, not on the top. So that's what I would like us to think about. So,
so Tanya, Christine, and Anne, and then Chris.
All right, so,
Tanya, yes.
Yeah, so two comments to that. In terms of people choosing to stay or go, I think foundationally we need to look that I don't really believe that that's necessarily aligned to vacation, but by their sense of belonging or their ability to network and socialize within the community. And Linda Kroll Howell could probably provide us with some great statistics on that from exit interviews. I think vacation might be part of that package, but I think it's a much bigger issue.
It's a much bigger issue. It's one part of it.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think probably a very small part in relation. And then the other comment I would make is, yes, when we look at Ithaca and other places regionally, we might want to also examine what the whole package is. So, for example, salary uh-huh. is not comparable between Ithaca and Cornell. So, like, in a very significant way on most roles.
So, but how can we get that data? That
so you
becomes
can,
an issue. You know,
well,
like
so
Cornell is a private institution. I can look at Binghamton salaries. I worked at Binghamton. The salaries are kind of comparable for whatever I do. But
so,
you know, I can't access that kind of data kind of globally. It becomes more complicated. You know,
well,
so
yeah,
it's
so,
more like a question for HR to. Find out if that's
so there, there is some ability to look. So Cornell, if you look at our, Career Navigator. Thank you.
Okay.
You can see pay band information, and at Ithaca College, I believe you can go and look at pay band. So you might not be able to say for this exact role it's this and this, but you can look and say, you know, a mid-level manager at Cornell is this and Cornell is that. I can tell you when I've looked at comparable jobs, Ithaca to Cornell for things in the same work that I do, it's $20,000 to $30,000 less.
Gotcha. Okay.
So just a thing to think about.
Right.
You know, vacation days are awesome.
So, but what do you think about the fact HR is open to accelerate the rate?
I think
us?
That's great. I love the idea of accelerating.
What would you like to see in this case? Well, maybe we should sleep on it and maybe
yeah.
next time, but maybe a couple of thoughts on this. Either remove this ladder or make it at year one or make it at complete at year five, whatever version. Let's, because at this point here, actually, we are 6 standard deviations away from where everyone else,
yeah.
like especially somebody with 9 years of experience, that's a really long time to wait. So
yeah,
just keeping it out there. So,
my guess is it comes down to attrition and when people choose to leave university. And so
I mean,
it's
yeah,
a payout thing,
right.
is my guess.
Yeah.
So Christine? Okay, Anne?
Just like clarification, are you including the week off between Christmas and New Year's?
Yes, yeah. So this one, whenever it says holidays, this includes all the holidays we get based on
exactly.
the academic year, including the Christmas holiday. Yeah.
I saw you added
the
2 days for that, but it's typically the whole week.
It's the week.
Christmas and New Year's.
No, no, it's a whole week.
Oh,
it's not
so,
2 days.
So
no,
there's
12
days added in?
Well, whatever business days we get, 5 days.
Well,
case,
yes,
you know.
But...
Yeah,
it's
six,
but over the whole year, right? But over the whole
year,
are we adding? Did you add in like the 2 days for Thanksgiving?
Yes,
and,
yes,
yeah.
yeah. Yeah. Holidays mean Thanksgiving, Memorial Day,
Labor
Day,
Martin Luther King Day,
Fourth of July. Although we don't get Veterans Day, there are we don't get Indigenous People Day. We call
mm-hmm.
out Indigenous People Day. We don't get that day. So yeah, it includes all of that, and some other universities in comparison, there's another graph, you know, that shows you who gets what. So some people get Good Friday, President's Day, Elections Day, Christmas Eve. Like, look how many Ivy universities that will get Christmas Eve off by default. 5 of them out of 8. You know, so that's a popular holiday. So we pretty much get these, like, most of the 8. Like Thanksgiving, Christmas Day, Labor, Memorial, Independence Day. This is like a standard package. Some people get more vacation days. Yeah.
I guess the 7, right? Because we get Thanksgiving and the
holiday. Yes. Yeah.
So, Chris?
Question?
Rather than a question, I did, I had a reason to get into my time off accrued today to take a look. And the personal and sick days are not insignificant. Like, mm-hmm. I count them as the same as vacation days, and I've got like 30 saved up. Like, right. So I feel that those are a huge benefit as well. And it's not just in the way you were presenting them, is that it kind of minimized?
Well, that's a good point because HR said they want to explore more how we access health and personal days. Because not all of Cornell, at least that's where they're arguing, they know how we access these days. Some people, they're just afraid of them. And that's my, that's my intuition too. When I first came, well, I don't want to take a personal day. What is personal day mean? Because I never had that, you know. I worked in a Florida State University. You were sick, or you, if you have to take care of business, you take a month, you know. So that was kind of, not, a lot of people are not used to the personal day. So that's why HR would like actually to figure out ways how more people can take advantage of first, because they're afraid of it. That's at least, that's my understanding.
Ellen and Herc.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, as an accrual, like a suggestion that I'm just pulling out of the air with no data to back it up, but something that I personally would like to see is like every 2 years an increase. Mm-hmm. I think that is, I mean, especially after your first 2 years, uh-huh. I think that really shows a commitment to, right. I've been here for 2 years, and that's, I'm committed to this university at that point. And I think it's nice to see a first bump at that point.
Right.
And I think every 2 years is a nice place to bump, but again,
yeah, I mean, that's
personal
good.
Opinion. Like,
right. I mean, that's where we need to just remember, we're looking at big picture. We're not comparable compared to other places, you know, whether we need to be open to change how we do things, you know. Like, do you think I'm not committed? I've been here 2 years and a half. I'm not committed to Cornell, you know. Like,
yeah.
I don't deserve a, like, I am committed to Cornell. I served on a lot of things. I help a lot of people. I'm happy to be here.
I think,
you know, so, like, do I need to be here for 10 years to be more committed? That's a question. That's really the question. So
in the interest of time, Herf, Christine, Karen, and then we need to move on.
I just had a statement is that one of the problems with counting sick time is that we're incentivized not to use it because
yeah,
when
that's
we retire,
the other thing. Yeah.
It's worth something.
Right.
On the endowed side, I don't know what the story is with the state. Mm-hmm. I think the state is completely
bank more.
And I had this discussion actually with Peggy. She
right.
says, well, if you save it, you save on your premium. So now people are diming and nickeling their sick time. They don't want to use it because they want to save premiums. And I've heard potential retirees saying, well, it's not, it wasn't actually worth it to save the premium.
It's not
so
a
there
lot
you go.
Money, to be honest with you.
What is it?
It's not a tremendous amount, but
right.
if you're going to retire for 30 years, it adds up. You know, you retire at 55 and you're getting, I think it's $19 a month reduction on your insurance premium.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's $240 a year, it adds up.
Okay.
So, no, it's, that's the way people look at it.
Yeah.
Get to be old in your 70s and then retire.
Right. So, Christine, thank
you. Very interesting data.
Thanks.
Pictures actually help a lot. I think that if we acknowledge the employees that are coming into the work into Cornell now, it would be foolish of us not to examine pushing those that ladder, as you reference it, forward, right? Where I'm not the authority, but I would be very supportive of any kind of concept for that.
Right.
I would caution us from asking for more. I think that asking for more is a really difficult conversation and likely would get us excluded from the conversation. So
right.
It would be interesting to me though to think about ways in which we can access our vacation. I have a lot. I don't take it as I earn it. I have a lot sitting around. And if someone said to me, you know what, there's this staff sabbatic program.
Yes.
You can take 2 months off and all the time, I'm not giving you more time, but you've got the time and here's how this program works. I think that would be very, very positive benefit to employees?
I think at this point, there is a policy somewhere after certain years of service, you can take an extended time off. Have you heard about that? But then it's unpaid. Like you can go unpaid, you know.
But if I have 60, if I have 60 days or 90 days, right?
Well, and you can't have 90 days. You cut off at 40.
With everything I have, right? I can have hours and hours and say, right. If there was a structure for a program that would say,
yes,
look, you could take off that whole summer that year. Go be with your kid,
yeah.
Whatever. I think that would be amazing.
That's true work-life balance too, because it sounds, I mean, for me, my experience, it's like, we can be off for, I'm less than 10 years. I'm off for less than four weeks a year. You know, if you want to enroll in something, you want to do something you're passionate about, well, good luck. You know, by the time you go take care of a parent, and go on vacation with family, and you know, you're not gonna have enough time to accomplish what you want. So having that access probably is important, and it happens at other universities. That's what
I think
allow sabbaticals at Dartmouth.
We have a lot more space to have that conversation at Cornell, I think, than asking for more.
Yeah. Any other?
Yes, Karen.
So I have a question about what are the comparable caps that you can. You sort of bank your sick and health, and at what point is it trip, use or lose?
What is it?
At what point do you max out and have to use or lose?
Well, most of them they max out at 40. It's because they look at it as an expense in this case, where if somebody is leaving, they have to pay them out for vacations. So I guess that's where HR's concern is. People leaving the university, now they accrue a lot of vacation days, now they have to cash them into cash, so it becomes monetary there. So most of everybody, like beyond, if you have like 40 days of vacation, you start losing, you can't accrue more, you have to use your vacation.
And that's in a calendar year?
No, that's not.
Over
time. So you can carry
like, you know,
40 days.
It's like
time.
A bucket.
But if in October you have 45, you'll lose those 5 days.
Right.
So it's like you just allow to carry this much over. Whatever you accrue, you keep losing. So I did not look exactly into that, but you know, they looked, they did not have language that was like totally wild. You can have 200 days and no problem. No, at some point, somebody's going to cut you off, like as far as how many vacation days you accrue.
And then what were the rules for new hires to use, because didn't Cornell just change the rules?
Yes.
For using? So that's where it's like.
So the rules were wait 1 year till you get vacation, till you even access the bank you're accruing. Because at day one, you can accrue stuff. But before, you had to write a consent that you're not going to leave them before 1 year, or they're going to ask you for money. We're getting away from this. Earn a day, you take a day off.
Is that the same with these other institutions? Is what I'm
no,
asking.
We don't. They did not set any. You know, you earn your days, you just take them right away.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, they don't
so I mean,
have
at
any,
least Cornell now
be
is
here
on par
Harvard has
with
rate.
Other places. So that's my goal is to make us comfortable and
on
par with other institutions. You know, so HR is open. So you know, we're not asking for much. They are open to discuss this ladder. You know. So maybe next time let's talk about, shall we destroy the ladder or shift it much closer or make it every 2 years? How can we make this ladder? Let's have the ladder conversation. You know, I was thinking like maybe I can provide a couple of options or three options with the graph so we can see how it looks. Otherwise, I don't know how we're gonna agree. Like not totally agree on one, but like have a general consensus on one versus the other. So that's what I'm planning to do next time. So
we'll have one more question and then
yes.
We do need to move on.
I just want, because
yeah.
We're talking about vacation days, the max of 40 with that 15 or more years of service. But where does it start to max? Because I think it's 90 days, my second group. And is that from the beginning or is that only with years of service that you can
nope, from the beginning.
From the
but
beginning.
It's 90
yeah.
days. So
right.
Again, a lot of times that maxes out just as quickly and easily
right.
as
So you can, like I do, because I'm maxed out, I take a day off every month, personal time. Just take a day.
Right.
Rest and rejuvenation, mental health, whatever.
Right.
All right. So, Tarek, I'd like to thank you for all of the hard work you've already put in prior to even joining the EA, as you've been thinking about this issue. And I think you gave us a lot to think about today. It was great to hear the conversation and the questions around it. And in terms of going forward, you know, you and your committee make the determination on how you'd like to recommend proceeding to the employee assembly once you feel you're at that stage.
Okay, so I mean, but I'm gonna bring back HR requested specifically bringing back. They would like your opinion on the accrual rate for employees between 1 year till 10, like first year till 10 years. So, you know, they would like your feedback, and maybe next step they want to talk about is how we better address health and personal leave. And I guess Mary last time she talked about
yes.
that. She would like to improve our access, you know, right. because the way the policies are written, it's kind of, it sounds like it's hard to access these and you have to wait such a long time.
Right.
So that's where I'm coming from. And I guess I'm heard now by them and they're willing to.
No, this is fantastic. And, you know, the example as well of your committee working directly with our colleagues to advance the ball on an issue is fantastic. So thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for listening.
So we'll go ahead and go into committee reports. I don't think Carrie is with us, but she is.
I'm here.
Hey,
just hiding.
So communications and awards.
Yeah, so I don't have much at the moment beyond what my update was at the retreat, but I do need to get our spring meetings on the calendar, so I will do that today. We will meet, we'll start up next Wednesday at our usual time, and I'll send out details for that soon. I will also be sending out a request for volunteers for the winter employee celebration, so keep an eye out for that. On that note, I did want to ask just general opinions. For those kinds of things, would you guys appreciate having that on your calendar, like added to your calendar as a reminder, or would you rather just do that yourselves?
I see heads nodding yes.
Yes.
Heads nodding yes? Okay, I'll take that and run with it then.
All right.
We'll add those to the calendar for all the members, and it doesn't mean you have to go, but it's just there as a reminder, and I'll put in the volunteer details as well if you want to volunteer for a shift. So I'll do that. We will be proceeding with our plan to review the awards programs this semester, and more details coming on that soon.
Great. Thank you very much, Carrie. Arla in the education committee.
So set a meeting for January 28th, which is a Monday. I'm looking for agenda items. Once I receive a few of those, I'll also share the limited data I received from the EDP office. One thing I wanted to revisit that was talked about at the strategic planning meeting was our idea of education committee and the connectedness to Cornell, like the Cornell walks or like the urban legend campus facts. And if anyone thought it was appropriate or inappropriate for education committee to take that on, I need some feedback. If it fell
would
under.
Would anybody like to discuss that now or have any comments about it? I think that's outstanding.
Okay. I wanted to make sure it fell under like the committee's charge.
Yeah, I think it's appropriate.
Okay.
But certainly anybody else's opinion or thoughts on that? Okay.
All right, thanks.
All right, thank you. Welfare committee, Andrea.
Hi, I don't have any other updates. We are looking to schedule our next meeting, and we'll try to find something that will work best for everybody. Time and space. We've been using with our work on the data from the employee conversations, the staff conversations, we've been using Zoom for some things, so we might just hop ahead, do a couple of Zoom and then see. But agenda items, I think the next step, we're going to be continuing the conversation Hey had with working with folks in the Title IX office on what we can do to help.
Thank you. And just as a reminder, Michelle Reichart, who worked with the Welfare Committee, really an outstanding example of somebody who's not a member of the Assembly, but really diving in and pitching in on the efforts and the work that we're doing. So committee chairs, if you have folks that you would like to recognize that have really gone above and beyond, please let Hey know who those folks are so we can do some appropriate, at least a letter of appreciation, something along those lines for the contributions that they're making to the staff community. So thank you. Benefits and Policy Committee, Tarek.
So nothing that new from last report, the retreat. Yeah. So but tomorrow we have we meet tomorrow, and I have two guests, Michelle Ardeby, so you know, mentioned by our guest here, and from Work Life, and Gordon from Benefits. They're gonna join us, and we're gonna have open discussion about you know, whatever issues we need clarification on. So
great, good to hear that. And what time is that, in case others are
so interested? Tomorrow, if anybody is interested, it's first of all, you can access all of our meetings on the employee was it the Assembly's website. If you go to the meetings, all of our meetings and the agenda and the minutes are there.
Great.
So you know, they're up to date. I've been updating these as I go. Tomorrow it's going to be between 2 and 3 at Ives Hall, 381. So if you forgot 381, just go onto the website and you should find it there.
Thank you very much. Christine, Transportation.
We had a meeting this week. Yes, Monday. Wow, it's been a long week. And I was out in admin support, so I'm so disorganized. So I apologize if anyone didn't get connected to the meeting or didn't get the link. You. Okay. Anybody else, let me know. I'll get you in there. I was behind on the whole Zoom thing too, so I apologize, Chris. We had a really great meeting, so I'm sorry if you weren't there. Bridget and Reed presented on several topics, one being a Transportation Safety Council, which I mentioned last time. There's under review a serious consideration for dropping speed limits to 25 across campus. So that's interesting. And we'll be hearing more about also crosswalk reviews. So they've systemized regular reviews of pedestrian crosswalks for visibility and other maintenance issues. They brought up East Ave and campus, the light install there, and that's being reviewed for functionality. They're considering modification to the pedestrian interval to it separates the car vehicles travel from the pedestrian travel. So they're considering some modifications to that to simplify the flow of traffic, as well as changing all campus lights to flashing red during off hours. They haven't defined off hours yet, but it seems that in the evenings, there's a lot of people sitting waiting for no one. Campus to campus, bus. So they've gone through an extensive safety review given the tragic accident with the Big Red Bullet and the kind of general perception that the Big Red Bullet is affiliated with Cornell. So they've gone under extensive kind of documentation of the safety of the campus-to-campus bus service, and they're launching a rebranding campaign, which creates a little more clarity around the distinction of campus-to-campus being the official Cornell bus. Also, communications campaign to have parents and students understand the differences in the bus services that Cornell bus versus these other vendors. They've been discussing the parking optimization study and continued with that. They're feeling good with the recommendations so far that they've received and are understanding from the consultant, and will be talking about that in February when they come to visit. We are seeking questions in advance so that they can come prepared to answer them, and we can get closer to just open dialogue. So if there's anything that's on your mind,
you can send it to me, you can send it to Hey, we'll get it to transportation so that their presentation responds to our questions. They're going to present on the study recommendations, but anything else that they can answer, they'd like to do that.
You're presenting here, you're presenting here.
Yeah. And then finally, we discussed the suggestion that Mary presented at the mid-year retreat about having a conversation across policy, benefits, and transportation. Very open to that, so I'll be sending you a note to invite a broader discussion.
Great, very much. Are there any questions for Christine?
Quick question. If I may, you mentioned the rebranding. Is that an internal to transportation effort, or did they mention at all that they're working with university communications or university relations?
I don't know. I think it's very hot topic right now because of kind of the unfortunate association that people have in the Cornell community with the Big Red Bullet. And so I imagine it's beyond them. They don't really have the staff, but I don't know that for certain.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Executive committee. So if you guys looked at the agenda, the next time we meet, Martha Pollack will be here. Are there any items that we would like the president to discuss? Any overall theme she wants, you would like her to speak about? If there's anything, you don't have to come up with the ideas now, please send them to me. Any questions that you want to ask? I think it's really helpful when we can think about these questions and then present them beforehand so that they can prepare, you know, adequate, you know, answers that are well researched, well thought out. I think that really helped them and help us move the conversation along. So you don't have to come up with it now, but if you want to send me any suggestions for topics, themes that you would like the president to discuss in February, that would be great. And also send any questions in regards to transportation, parking optimization study, or that you would like Bridget and Reed to mention in the February 20th discussion, that'd be really helpful. Thank you all for participating in the mid-year retreat. I've taken all the feedback. I put it in a spreadsheet, and I think it's really, I feel like there are a lot of common sentiments. People really like the opportunity to do open discussions, to talk more, to circulate these ideas. So I think as we think about these next coming, you know, meetings that we're going to have, I'm hoping to try to incorporate more time to be able to have those, you know, conversations and to have that dialogue. And I think that it was a good point for us to kind of say, let's take a step back. What are some things that are working? What are some things that are not working? How can we improve this process and these meetings to be more helpful to you all and to make it a good use of your time? Yeah. So thank you all for participating in that. Yeah.
Okay. And Elections Committee, I don't believe they have anything unless Gina, I think March is when we're really going to start thinking about that in earnest.
Yeah, there's a lot that needs to happen in conversation about elections probably before before that. So is Pilar the chair of the Elections Committee? Okay, it might be. And I think everybody whose position is not up for re-election or who's still going to be on the assembly is a member of that committee. So there are there's some reconfiguration things that just need to be addressed in order.
Is there anything we can do? Are there, so in terms of membership of the election committee, just so I have it straight, it's anyone who's not coming up for reappointment or re-election,
whose position is not up for re-election. There's
okay.
Three different cohorts.
Gotcha.
So at any year, a third of the assembly is
should
part of these elections committee.
Okay. All right. Great. Are there any questions about that? So several of you may be on the elections committee and not know it yet.
I think I mentioned it to you before, but Peggy and I share one seat.
Yes.
And what I'm trying to do is have those seats now overlap. So this coming year, one of us will step down and we'll have an election to replace it. So then we have some continuity in the seat.
Great idea. So.
Yeah, thank you for doing that. Okay. In terms of new business, we had discussed at the mid-year retreat bringing forward a resolution today. Since Pilar is out and she's the sponsor of the resolution, we're going to push that until our next meeting, unless there's any concerns with that, doing that. So, and just as a reminder, this was initially brought to the assembly during our early December meeting. So if you'd like to take a look again at the information. And then last, just open it up for discussion if there are other things that you wanted to talk about. Yes, Gina.
If I may, it's to Hey's request for input on the president's visit. If I could encourage you all to take these last 10 minutes, and I mean, the more you all really drive that conversation, the more beneficial it'll be. The president has been here the last two visits. She left before her allotted time because there wasn't anything to talk about. This is a really, really great opportunity at the highest level. She's coming here so that you guys can engage in whatever the things are. Just figure out what those things are. And if it's, you know, if you want to talk about any of the conversations that you've had, anything out of the retreat, anything that you're hearing in your local spaces, but formulate it amongst yourselves so that you can really start really getting into meat and potatoes. If you were gonna put forth some things that came to Hey through email, they would have to go today. The president's office needs at least 2 weeks in order to prepare responses that are properly researched and vetted. She probably would appreciate more time than that to make sure that there's context around what the questions and concerns and comments or issues are. So there may or may not be time for her to prepare responses. But you know, there's several folks on the assembly who've been participating where the president has addressed at different times. Touch base, even I'll call Pam into this as well. Find what has worked in the past in order to really make this a robust, engaging conversation at its fundamental sense. Shared governance is you and the president having conversations. So I'm just encouraging you to use as much time as you can, whether it's today, if you want to have another meeting between now and then, or how we can facilitate whatever the ideas are, but really take advantage of this. It's a great opportunity. And talking about other institutions, comparing apples to oranges, this kind of engagement doesn't happen readily. So that's my encouragement.
Yes.
So the one thought I have historically, if your motto is an active voice for staff, and what's happened a lot when the president comes in the past meetings is you ask her a lot of questions, and that makes sense because she was new to her role and you're curious. But I think now that you've had enough opportunity to engage with her, you might want to think about what active voice you want to present to her, right? So what is it that, what kind of statements do you want to make, and how can you be good conduits of communication for the constituencies that you represent? And even if you feel ill-equipped to represent your constituencies all that effectively right now, you are a constituency and you have a voice at the seat at the table in front of, you know, the leader of our university. So maybe consider what kind of things you might want to say.
But one of the challenges I think we have with that aspect of it is that, having just kind of concluded with staff conversations, we have a lot of information. However, it in order to give Mary the appropriate time to digest what we're going to share with her and so forth, I just think it's going to be too compressed to then, you know, bring that stuff to the president. I mean, I don't know, Kate?
What about the concept of something that came out of our response to the retreat? I think it was Chris who had the and Gina kind of coined the cool jewels.
Cool jewels
at Cornell. The idea, the concept of encouraging managers, directors, vice presidents, leaders at the university to encourage their staff members to have to take advantage or to offer access to events at the university on a regular basis that are away from their work area.
Right.
Whether it's for exempt staff or non-exempt staff, that if there were 2 hours a month that you were encouraged to just go and, you know, go to a lecture, go to Soup and Hope tomorrow to hear Shirley Collado, or go to, you know, meet lecture, or sit in on someone else's fun meeting, that seemed like something that's really positive, and recognizing like the huge wealth that we have here and a way to make people feel.
Karen?
So I think one point is that, did we all know that we have to give stuff to her when she's coming 2 weeks prior to?
No.
I mean, it's news to me.
Yeah, I think best case scenario going forward, I think we should use that as our milestone. I think in terms of this week, let's shoot for Friday. And you know, it's I will tell you, the last time we did it, it was like 2 days in advance. So let's shoot for Friday. We'll just keep getting better at it. And so if you could have questions or ideas that you'd like to raise, have those to Hay by Friday.
And the other thing I wanted to bring up was that she spoke in the fall. There were a lot of questions from the audience that I feel like I was hearing from my constituents that just didn't get answered adequately. And is there a transcript from that that we can revisit before Friday?
It's on CornellCast.
Sort of piece those apart. It's on CornellCast.
Yeah. So if you want to rewatch that or.
Yes. Yeah, Karen, we do have a full text transcript of the whole thing. And I can also provide the list of questions that were answered and the list of questions that we didn't get to as well. That would help.
Okay.
You know, in terms of like giving her a question 2 weeks in advance, at the end, there's going to be the, does anybody have any questions? It doesn't mean if we haven't sent it in now, this is just what we want her to come here prepared to address. But I think it looks, it's great if we have more questions than can be answered, more to talk about with her than we have time to talk about. And
so Laura and then Ellen.
I have been getting the distinct impression, as Gina mentioned, that, you know, I think President Pollack is operating a little differently than other past university presidents. She's not coming prepared to present to us and respond to our questions necessarily. I get the distinct impression she wants us to have a presentation ready to give to her. And I think that's what Gina was trying to say. But I think, you know, we might want to think about this in terms of, yes, all of us get together and maybe, you know, I don't know whether Hey would be the person who would do this, but just sort of say, okay, the following people have said they want to talk at the presentation to President Pollack about these things so that we have a smooth flowing kind of thing. And obviously if we get into a really robust discussion and she's running with some idea, you know, you don't want to squelch that. But
well, I think that's an interesting suggestion and possibly one way we can approach this is that we use that time to do committee reports with the president to where the committees can say, we're really happy you're here. These are the issues that we're currently working on within the committee level. Kind of just let us provide her the feedback rather than an expectation that she is, you know, giving us some you know, gleaming ideas and so forth. So that's a really interesting, are there any other thoughts on that particular suggestion?
Well, that's exactly what I was gonna say, is that why don't we give her our committee reports like we would give among each other and have her feedback on what we're working on and what she thinks we can move forward on or focus on more, where she thinks it's not really working.
Right. Okay, Terry.
So I kind of agree with Ellen because I'm not sure how much transparency the president has.
Yeah.
To say, you know, we haven't worked with the president before. So yeah, committee reports, you know, I would like the president to know what we're working on. And to add to others that talked about the address, yeah, there's a lot of questions that did not get answered. And I felt the address was about students and faculty, and it was not about employees. So how can we ask the president, so apples to oranges, why working at Cornell, not teaching, not studying, not any of the other stuff, you know, why working at Cornell is unique, you know? So do we compare to others? Or, I mean, you know, I'm always bringing that theme, like comparison, but like, let's think that way. How can be unique? What are the advantages, you know, how can we grow? Because, you know, Mary Opperman said she wants to see change and she wants us to grow. Well, that's how we do it, I think.
I think that's a great question. Yeah. Can you email it to me?
Okay, so we are at our time right now. So I can just real quick show of hands. Anybody think that's a bad idea? Okay, well, Karen, please.
I think it's a great idea. I think, but can we do like maybe committee reports and questions?
Yes. I think there should be a smooth flow of discussion as committee reports come out. You know, there's going to be a dialogue. I would expect interaction between her, Mary, you know, that would come naturally out of that. So thank you very much, Laura and Ellen. Herf?
I just think that because there's two things that we've seen prominently recently. somehow we should have some discussion with her about the core values.
Yes.
And the Greek, like, you know, governance changes.
That sounds like a question.
Yeah, and part of, in terms of, yes, it's a good question. Knowing, though, that Mary and her team are tasked with developing that, I would not want to put Mary on the spot in front of the president if that's not quite ready for prime time. But great, yes.
But these are the president's initiatives. She has tasked Mary as part of her senior staff with collecting the information. But I think it's, you know, not to, but respectfully, I agree with her. These are flesh out from the president. What is she, you know, what's her timeline? What does she hope they are, you know, she's here. Is she going to answer? They're two of her top priorities personally as the president. So, you know, find out from her what her thoughts are. That may even inform Mary as she moves forward with collecting the information. So I don't think anything is necessarily off. And if Mary and Martha, you know, in their relationship, I'm sure that they will be deferential if there's something out of that they're not quite prepared to talk about.
I wouldn't make that the main focus, but it just seems like we touched on that because, I mean, it is an initiative for her office. And I think we're all kind of supportive of both of those.
Right. So thank you very much. I apologize. We need to go ahead and wrap up. So if there are further questions, please email Hey, and we will make sure that's communicated here. Have a wonderful afternoon. Thanks for all you're doing.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.